Hey, Bubba's, welcome to Better Yet. I'm Tim Crisp, your host, your very, very busy host, who's about to have his first day off in quite some time. Your host, who has learned when it is best to just say, I gotta sit this one out, coach. So I'm taking a moment to breathe this week. I've got some great interviews in the bank, and I'm looking forward to sharing them with you starting next week, my friends. In the meantime, let me leave you with what I would consider my first favorite interview. They're all my favorite, right? They're all great. But this one was the one where I said, this is what I've always had in mind for this podcast. Episode number 8 with Nnamdi Obanaya from the summer of 2016. This is an interview that I cite as a key to developing this show. It features a host who's starting to gain his footing but still needs to commit to buying a decent mixer, and a guest who's about to soar. Follow this episode up by listening to Drool, Nnamdi's 2017 record, and then the two Monobody LPs. There you have it. I've curated an entire 3-hour block of time for you, and I'm off. Enjoy the interview, folks. We'll see you next week. Hey, all right, and welcome to episode number 8 of the Better Yet podcast. I'm Tim Crisp, your host. Better Yet is a long-form interview podcast featuring musicians talking about influence, talking about writing, and talking about being around. Hello and welcome to first-time listeners. Welcome back to those returning. Shout out to those who reached out with happy sober birthday salutations. I went out for cheeseburgers with the homies that night, came home and watched Die Hard 3. I nodded off in the middle. I came back to right before the big subway crash sequence. Really a perfect way to celebrate. Felt good. My guest this week, the omnipresent Nnamdi Obanaya, one of the busiest, most talented individuals I have ever come across in my time playing and going to see shows. My first interaction with Nnamdi was in September of 2009 when his band The Paramedics played at my house in Normal, Illinois. I moved up to Chicago a couple years later, and at that point, he had cast a very wide net, playing in a lot of bands, a lot of very different bands, living at the Swart Mansion when they were having shows, and really over the past 5 years, I've grown accustomed to seeing Nnamdi pretty often, so I was really excited to have him on the show. Very excited to be able to talk to someone about rap, and this interview was one of the first that I made a conscious effort to not really have a rigid timeline laid out. I knew Nnamdi would be a really great person to just have a naturally flowing conversation with, and that's what happened. And he was funny and bright, and shit got pretty real for both of us. So let's get to that. Before we do, here's a Nnamdi song featuring Julius Steiner of Rat Boys. The song is Sit Tight, followed by my interview with Nnamdi Obanaya.
Give them
all something else to go to.
Yeah, if you guys didn't like this podcast, go. This one's way better.
These guys get better interviews, stumble on their words a little bit less. Hey, the fucking guests are better. So, where'd you grow up?
Where did I grow up? Lansing, Illinois.
Yeah? South suburbs, right?
South suburb of Chicago. Woo-wee. It sucked.
Yeah?
It was fine. I mean...
Is it a big town?
No, it's pretty small. But, yeah, there's nothing to do. So kids just started punk bands.
Yeah.
Huffed Glue.
Huffed Glue, for real?
That was a thing. That was like a popular thing in Lansing for a while.
Damn.
Yeah. Or, man, that's probably just people I knew that were doing that. I don't think the population of Lansing was trying to do that. But, yeah, there's nothing to do.
You're pretty close to the border, right?
Yeah.
Were you born there?
I was born in L.A. area.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... But I was only there as a baby, so I don't remember much.
Uh-huh.
Besides going back to visit parents and being like, this is kind of familiar.
Going back to visit your parents?
Yeah.
So you did not grow up in your parents' house?
I did. So we all moved. I was born in L.A., and then we moved to Ohio for a little bit, and then we moved to Lansing. So
okay.
I was in first or second grade when we moved to Lansing.
Okay.
So pretty much raised there, went to middle school and high school there. And then when I started college, my parents were like, bye, see you later, and they moved back to L.A.
Yeah, my parents did the same thing, except they got a divorce instead. Oh. No, it's cool. They actually, they got back together a few years ago. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's crazy. Life is weird.
So, was there a lot of music in the house growing up?
My dad played guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
What was he into?
He was really into Bob Marley.
Yeah.
And... Those Jerry upstrokes. Garcia for some reason, yeah. But like,
well, I mean, Jerry Garcia is great at guitar. That's probably why.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, but yeah. It's so weird because my dad is super Christian, and at a point in my life, he like stopped listening to Bob Marley, and that he was really into the Police too.
Yeah,
that's what I remember. But like at a certain point, he just stopped listening to all types of like secular music. I just did air quotes on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody's going to listen to other podcasts now.
Like, that idiot did air quotes. We can't see you. No, but yeah. Listen to that and then just like a bunch of like Nigerian Christian music. And
yeah. Like, yeah. Is that where he's from?
Yeah. Both my parents are from Nigeria.
Yeah. When they come to the USA.
So my brother was born there and I think like a few months after he was born, they moved here.
Uh-huh.
My dad went to school in California. And Canada, like, back and forth.
What do you go to school for?
Theology?
Oh, wow, yeah. He's really Christian.
Yeah, like, super Christian. Yeah, he went for theology and something else, I forget. He got, like, two masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was that like growing up?
It was... He was just always studying, which was
cool. Yeah. Was there a big fear of God sense?
Oh, yeah, that portion of it? I mean...
I mean, yeah. What subsect of Christianity was he practicing?
So my upbringing was really weird because my parents were like, all right, you guys are Christian. We grew up in Christian church. And then, like, at a certain age, they're like, oh, by the way, you're Jewish. And we're just like, all right.
What?
Cool, yeah. Because I guess originally my dad was Jewish or, like, family was Jewish and everyone converted or something.
Uh-huh.
But he wanted to, like, keep the traditions or, like, not... He didn't want us to lose the traditions that...
Yeah, yeah, Judaism, sure.
Like, I guess. But it was just... it was confusing.
Right.
So I was just like, I don't know. As long as I get more holidays, yeah, whatever. We get to eat more.
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah sounds great. I'm down with it.
So, yeah, it was tight. Growing up in church was fine.
Yeah. So did you go to temple and to church, or did you, like, at one point just start going to temple?
No, we, like I only went to temple a few times.
Oh, okay.
Because my dad would sometimes, like, teach there.
Uh-huh.
And, but, like, yeah, it wasn't a common thing. We just went to church, like, every Sunday.
Was the household pretty strict in terms of, like, Christian and non-Christian?
Very, very strict. But I didn't, I'm not bitter about any of it. It didn't,
That's good.
I still did the things that I probably would have done, like,
that's gonna happen, right?
You know, yeah.
It's like not having cable when you grow up.
Yeah, you'll find a way.
You'll find a way to watch Nickelodeon.
Definitely. I found a way to do all the dumb things I wanted to do.
You still go to church ever?
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I play drums at churches, but like not, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, for sure. That's fine, right? How'd you start getting into music on your own?
I was in band in fifth grade. the middle school band director came to our school. And they're trying to recruit people for middle school band. So they handed out like little forms of people to fill out like what instrument they wanted to play. And I think my two were trumpet and drums. And I don't know why I ended up playing drums, but
just, yeah, they needed drummers.
Probably. I don't like, I remember nothing. I just remember being like, I really love trumpet. I really love drums. And then the next thing I remember, I'm wearing this marching drum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was cool.
Did you get into like the band aspect of it? I know that it's.
I loved band.
Did
you? Are you kidding me?
You're the first one.
So tight.
You're the first one. Everybody hated practicing.
Oh no, fuck that. That's the only reason I went to school. I would have ditched like all the time
if
I didn't have a band. It was so fun. That was like the only friends I had were in band. And yeah, it was just wonderful.
Did you take a lot from like the music theory aspect of it?
I didn't take as much as I should have. Like, I started studying music theory pretty heavily, but then I was just like, why did I do this? This is dumb. Yay. I'm just going to learn things by ear. And now that I'm older, I'm like trying to catch up with the things I could have just been learning all along.
But I mean, that's kind of a common thing, right?
Yeah.
You picture, oh, drums are going to be so much fun. Yeah. I just get to play like a drum set all day right away. It's going to be the best. And then you're like, no, I don't want to do this time signature bullshit.
Yeah, I didn't even have a drum set when I started. I started like piano and drums at the same time, but I did piano like outside of school with like this my father's friend who was also a pastor. His mom taught piano and she was amazing, so like I started that at the same time.
Did you like doing that?
I did, but then I got a drum set and I was like, why am I gonna play piano? Piano's for girls. And I was just like a dumb little kid that thought didn't know anything about the world. And I have few regrets, but one of them is like not being harder like on myself with music theory. Not continuing playing piano.
I mean, Matt from Coaster expressed the exact same thing when he was in here.
It's just like, but I don't know. I like the way I am now musically, so.
You remember
it's all fine.
You remember the first like bands that you were getting into?
Yes. I was really, really into Sum 41 is my favorite band of all time. Like, no contest. Like, I'll argue about that until the day I die. Why?
You're like fourth or fifth grade when that Fat Lip video came out.
Yeah, and it just
you're the target
changed
audience.
My life. Like, yeah. I listened to All Killer No Filler and Does This Look Infected like at least once a week.
Yeah,
like still.
Were you into Blink 182?
Not as much, but yeah, I was still.
Yeah, Sum 41 is cooler.
Sum 41 was cooler to me. Yeah, and everyone else was like, "What? No, Blink 182." Like they're the same band for some reason. Like. They're on the same level.
Pretty similar, like a lot of fart
like
jokes.
You like one or you like the other?
Yeah, sure, sure, sure.
It's just like, all right, I picked Team Sum 41.
Yeah. So what about you start playing drums outside of school band?
Yeah, that was... I started with Dylan Pascula. We started this band called The Paramedics. And we didn't have a bass player, so I would also like play bass. But I didn't have a bass, so I'd play like on a guitar with less strings and we would record the bass tracks like a tape and then put in a tape player and like play along to that.
Yeah,
it was silly.
What were you trying to sound like?
We were so bad. Like, I just found some tapes the other day. It's so horrible. We were trying to sound like a mixture of The Who, The Beatles, and we were just getting into the Mars Volta, so it's like this weird combination of all these things. It was so bad.
And you guys kind of, like, I mean, you really found your sound after some time, though.
Yeah.
When did you actually start playing together, you and Dylan?
I started playing in, I think, like, 7th or 8th grade.
And you retained that until, like, what, 2012, 2013?
Yeah, so a long time.
Tell me about that evolution of just, like, figuring it out along the way.
So at first, we were like, because Dylan really loves The Beatles and The Who. Like, I got into both of those bands.
Yeah.
Hanging out at his dad's garage house, just listening to those records while his dad smoked and, like, lit incense and just being like, this is crazy. We'd watch all these crazy DVDs of live concerts and, like, interviews. And
those Who concerts where they're smashing the shit out of their guitars and stuff like that?
And that shit, like, had a huge impact on...
Yeah, dude, like, I feel like The Who gets overlooked by our
really
generation.
Do. Because, like, the only things they played on the radio were, like, two songs that my generation.
Yeah, which is, I love that song.
It's a dope song.
That whole record is great.
Yeah, there's so much more good music.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what was that? The Rolling Stone Rock and Roll Circus Tour. Did you ever see that DVD?
No, I never saw that.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was like Rolling Stones, The Who, Jethro Tull played on it.
Oh,
it was like
shit.
This weird circus-y vibe. But The Who blew everyone out of the water.
I believe
on
that.
Like, it just completely destroyed everyone, made people look bad.
So is that like, what's that, the 70s, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Who's Next is kind of like where it cuts off for me.
I never
got into the stuff that's like too heady after that, yeah. But Who's Next is like a perfect record.
It's great because you always see, what's his name? Who's the singer? I can't remember.
Daltrey.
Yeah, you always see him on like those commercials where they're trying to sell like CDs of the old time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he's just, like, advertising. Dude, it's tough, man. I mean, I guess I like, I can empathize with anybody that doesn't like any band from a previous generation because of what they've seen. Like, yeah. I got this fucking U2 poster in my room, yeah. And like everybody hates U2, and I totally get it because Bono's been the worst for like 15 years.
Yeah, but it's also like a completely different type of music, or like different era of music. Like, no one can be, I don't think anyone can be like a guitar superstar like that anymore, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's, I don't think that's ever gonna exist. Like, someone that's just like, yeah, we're a guitar band and we're superstars.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. No, I like talk to my dad and he'll be like, that's all you needed. Like, Jeff Beck. Like, yeah. He's just great at guitar and I'll listen to the Jeff Beck group just because of that. Or like Santana.
Never, that's never gonna be big again.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everyone's just like, rap. Or like punk music, and even that, like punk music is smaller because rap is just like the only thing. It's like taking over that and pop country.
Yeah,
just, like,
for
the
sure.
The two biggest genres.
Absolutely.
It's crazy to think about.
So Paramedics are playing in Lansing. Lansing ended up having a pretty cool scene.
Yeah.
During that time. Like Bats, Young Devilry.
Yeah, all those dudes are the ones that got me into house shows because like I didn't know anything about that. And just seeing like Tommy Borst and Joey Seeger, and like they were already in bands before like I even knew people could do that, and I was like, whoa, I could do this, like, yeah, now, yeah, yeah, being a kid, and they're already doing it and touring, and I was like, this is fucking tight. So yeah, they're very influential in like me wanting to pursue that.
Yeah, I mean, I've especially coming from like watching larger than life rock bands,
yeah,
on DVDs.
Yeah, and it's just like, I'll never do that. And it's like, you don't have to.
Yeah, yeah, just, for like, sure. You can do it on your own level. Yeah. And playing for people is playing for people.
Yeah.
So, after high school, you go to college?
Yeah. I went to Purdue Cal for a minute.
What's dropped that?
Purdue Calumet.
It's, oh, like, okay, yeah, sure.
Dropped out of that shit.
Why?
Because I just suck at school and I hated it.
And you go for engineering?
Yeah, engineering, dropped out. Then I went to community college for a year just to get some, like, gen eds done. Then
yeah,
I go,
yeah,
to UIC,
oh, okay,
for engineering, too. But, like, yeah, Swerp started kind of when I started going to UIC.
And, okay,
like, there's a lot of cool bands from the suburbs that I really liked.
Uh-huh.
We're trying to, like, make people notice, like, oh, there's cool shit here, not just in Chicago. Because people in Chicago are just like, yeah, I'm not going to go to the Burbs for this show, even though we're all friends, because it's like, it's a hassle. But
right,
people from the Burbs always come to the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're just like, man, fuck y'all.
So it started as a suburban thing?
Yeah, it's like, there's so much cool shit in the suburbs.
So who was involved in that?
It was my friend Matt Nix, who was the one who had that idea to actually start the label.
Uh-huh.
He was like, he's a really good guy, and he's really passionate about music and very supportive of all the stuff I've done. And he's like, dude, we gotta do this. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. But yeah, it was fun while it lasted, but like, we weren't as organized as we should have been. We weren't all on the same page.
And you're all 18, 19,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're youngins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A little bit older, probably like early 20s.
Did you move to the city when you started going to UIC, or...?
I moved to the city, like, a year after.
Okay.
So, like, I was commuting for the first year.
Uh-huh.
And
playing in a lot of bands at this point already?
Playing in a lot of bands, like, 7 at the time. And
Jesus, man.
Yeah, I'm dumb. And then I would drive to the Red Line, uh-huh, and take the Red Line to school. And then one day my car got stolen, and I was just like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Right. So now I gotta put 8 things on hold.
Yeah. So I had to figure that all out, and then I moved to the city with my brother.
Yeah.
We moved into Swerp just us two.
Is he older than you?
Yeah, he's like 30-something. I don't know how
old he is. Yeah, you're 26 now.
Yeah, I should know how old he is. 32, I think.
But yeah. You guys get along really well? You always get along really well?
I mean, yes and no.
Is he showing you music when you were growing up?
Always.
Yeah.
Definitely a big influence. He introduced me to Black Sabbath. He introduced me to Mars Volta, too.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite bands.
So, I mean, you're playing in 7 different bands already. You're always playing in 7 different bands. How did that happen?
Because fucking, I don't know. It's mostly because people don't play drums.
Uh-huh.
But then I started playing bass in bands. I didn't play bass, and I just fucking...
Yeah, when did you start doing that? Paramedics.
Yeah.
I wasn't even playing bass in that.
I just did it because no one else was there to do it. And now... I probably play bass more than I play drums some months.
Yeah, sure.
Which is crazy. Yeah, I don't...
So tell me about that mindset, I guess, just of like, oh, I need another band to be in.
I don't want to be in any more bands. Like, I'm trying to downsize.
Yeah.
I've downsized. So like,
I quit. You're involved with so much dope shit. It's got to be hard to even think in those terms.
Yeah. Like, I quit. I was in this band My Dad for a while, and I stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And this band Pisces at the Animal Fair kind of, like, dwindled away. So it's, like, slowly getting to the groups that actually want to do this for real.
Yeah,
you know, like,
sure.
The older you get, the less time you have for just, like, bullshit, you know?
Uh-huh.
Just like, oh, these people are, like, real about this, and they have fun.
Yeah.
And they want to do this, so it's, like... Those are the type of people I want to get involved with.
Sure. So, Super Swag Project.
Yeah.
Starts in 2012. Were you always into rap?
Yeah. Like, always. I was really into, like... Damn, I don't even want to say this, actually.
No, you should totally say it.
I was really, really into Radio Disney.
Uh-huh.
Like, so I would listen to all the songs on Radio Disney, and...
Is that like agreed upon entertainment for the car rides?
No, it was just me in my house.
Like, oh, shit.
Late middle school, early high school, like listening to Radio Disney.
Yeah.
But they would change the lyrics to songs to make them friendly for uh-huh. kids.
Yeah.
Like that one song, that Mambo Number 5, which is sure. about like having sex with a bunch of women, I'm pretty uh-huh. sure. They made it into like a little bit of Minnie in my life, a little bit of Mickey's all I like. Just like about... cartoon characters.
Uh-huh.
So I would think like those were the actual words to songs. And then I started listening to B96, which is like a popular
hip-hop
station here. And I was like, oh shit, that's not what he was saying on that song. He's nasty.
Yeah, but Lou Bega wasn't a rapper either.
Yeah, but they did that with all sorts of songs. Like,
yeah.
I remember like some Shaggy songs they did that with.
Uh-huh.
I forget what they... songs.
I mean, you and I kind of came of age in a very dark time for hip-hop.
Dark time,
yeah. I mean, like, when I was in high school, the biggest rapper was 50 Cent.
Yeah.
And, like, definitely. No disrespect to 50 Cent, but he wasn't as cool as Biggie and Tupac. He
definitely wasn't.
And he's not as cool as Kendrick.
He has some bangers, though. I like 50 Cent a lot. But going back and listening to some of his songs, it's just, like... Like P.I.M.P. It's just like uh-huh. I was listening to this as a kid, and it was like influencing how I thought. And it's just like, I don't know what you heard about me. It's just like so bad towards women, and like it affects you. Like you don't know it, but all that shit affects you when you're young. And you have to learn.
Do you think about that aspect of hip hop a lot?
I do, because I feel like luckily I was rooted in a very strong thinking family.
Uh-huh.
So it's like. A lot of that shit didn't really influence me as much, but like I know people that's what raised them, you know? Like
music sure.
raised them, so they just hear that shit and it's like, well, that's what I am now.
Yeah.
I'm a P.I.M.P.
Yeah. I mean, how do you, I mean, it's such a process that, I mean, I just as a listener have a tough time like justifying to myself too. Like, oh man, there's a lot of shit that's being said here that I don't agree with. But, like, it's a form of expression that I think is so legitimate.
Yeah, it's... I had to realize... And this was only probably, like, 5 or 6 years ago that I came to this conclusion. That music doesn't have to be the representation of the people making it. You know? Sure. Most of it is, though. Most of it people are making it because that's how they feel, but some people just make it because they want to convey a certain thing. Like, just the same with actors. Like, you wouldn't be mad at an actor who's acting as a murderer in a song.
Right. Or an abuser.
But, like, music, it's way different for people because they just, there's a stigma to it where it's like, this has to be from this person's heart, people feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not the case. And I've, like, it's so hard to overcome that with music.
Uh-huh.
And realize some people just say shit because they want
to. Yeah, there's like a poetic attachment to it where, you know, you just make the assumption as a listener and they're like, oh, that must be who they are.
Yeah, which, yeah, I'm trying to do both things. I'm trying to, like, have stuff where people are, where I'm extremely open and people know, and then say whatever I want as well. And
just Well, I think that the best MCs have channeled a version of themselves into, you know, some type of persona, usually larger than life.
Yeah.
Like, more recently, Kendrick playing the shy, reluctant gangbanger, or, like, Earl Sweatshirt.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what's your persona? Who's Namdi the rapper?
Who's me? Namdi the rapper? It's just someone that's super happy and that doesn't give a shit about people saying bad things about him,
I think. Where's that come from?
I don't know. I just try to stay positive with everything, even with, like, negative songs I write. It's like there's something positive in there, because I listen to, like, a lot of depressing music because it makes me feel good. Like,
yeah, sure.
Some, like, horrible sad movies, like, they make me feel good. It's right. Just like, it's all about how you feel afterwards. Like, I don't know how to explain this the way I want to. I think what I'm trying to say is I don't want to just be a person that's just, like, only saying, ah, everything's positive, everything's nice all the time.
Yeah.
I want people to know that that feeling can be there, that you can be happy, you know? But I don't want to, like, sugarcoat shit and bullshit.
Yeah.
Everything's fine all the time.
Right. It's kind of a communication of, like, hey, I want you to be happy. I'm not going to tell you to be happy, but I'm just going to make this thing.
Yeah.
That, and hopefully, like, is inherently.
Yeah, hopefully it makes you happy.
You think you do good with it?
I think I do pretty good with it.
Yeah.
Could always do better.
Yeah, sure. Maybe join another band.
No. God, no.
So how did the Super Swag Project come together?
Super Swag Project was all my friend JD. I had already been doing music solo under the name Namdi Super Duper Secret Side Project. And he started rapping. He was making, like, 8-bit thrash music.
Yeah.
Under the name Thrash Kid. Oh, wait. Uh-huh. You went to the same school, right?
Did we?
You went to ISU?
Yeah.
Yeah, you went to ISU.
Oh, no shit.
So, yeah, he was making music under that moniker, and he started getting really into rap, and he was like, yo, Namdi, let me get you on a couple songs.
Oh, cool.
And then one song turned into two, and then just kept evolving into more songs until we had a whole album, and we're like, okay, I guess we're in a group now.
Right, might as well put it
and
out.
He called it, he used the super name, called it Super Swag. And I was all for it, because I say super all the time.
Yeah, where's that come from?
I just say, like, man, that's fucking super.
Yeah.
I just say, that's super awesome.
Because it's like, it's your tag.
I guess so.
You just kind of noticed that it was a thing?
Yeah, I noticed it when I was in high school that I would say super loud. I don't think other people noticed it as much as I did.
Yeah,
I would catch myself every time. I'm like, man, that's super crazy. That's super wild.
I mean, it's a good descriptor for a lot of the music that you make. That, like, weirdo shit.
That's good. That weirdo shit. Get that weirdo shit out of here.
I mean, so what do you think of his beats? Like, how would JD? You describe them? Yeah.
They're insane.
Yeah.
Like, no one thinks of music the way he thinks of music, which is why I hope to keep making music with him till the day I die.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't trained at all. He just goes off of feeling, but he's learned so much. He, like, learned how to play drums by himself, and he learned how to program and make beats all by himself. And they keep getting progressively crazier. Like, the way he thinks is just unlike anyone else. He can understand rhythm in ways that, like, I can't even. And I've been playing drums for so long.
Yeah. Like, where does your understanding of rhythm come from, do you think?
YouTube. Just watching people play drums.
Yeah.
All the time.
Because it's out there, man. I can't follow some of that shit.
Thank you. Yeah, it has a lot to do with the people I've been around, like, influencing the way I play.
Uh-huh.
Because with drums, a lot of it is people will have parts already written, and I'll just come and try to figure it out. It's like trying to dissect other people's brains.
Yeah.
And of something cohesive.
You benefit a lot from just being around people.
Yeah.
Has it always been that way, you think?
Musically, yeah. Like, I would never be in or play with someone who isn't doing something that I think is, like, unique or... Either unique or, like, extremely fun.
Uh-huh.
So, both is awesome, but sometimes you don't get both.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of crazy, you know, the number of different things that you're in, you know, from Nervous Passengers, a punk band, Monobodies, like, a mathy jazz pop thing.
Yeah, whatever that is.
But it's just funny, to, like, listening to all of your shit over the past few weeks, and, like, it's sort of united just in, like, a math element.
Yeah.
Or just a weird thing.
Yeah. I think when I first started, the math thing was more intentional. Like, I was just like, man, fuck mainstream. I'm going to write music that messes up people's brains. I don't care if they like it.
Yeah.
But as I get older, it's like, no, I want people to like it. Like, yeah, I don't want to have no one listening to the music. So you got to, like, have a middle ground. And I think it's become less a thing that I think about when writing music and more of, like, just second nature. Because think about the way people talk. Like, I always compare that to music. I think this, I heard this from Frank Zappa. Like, people don't talk in 4/4.
Like, uh-huh.
People talk in, like, little rhythms here and there.
So right, like, yeah, and they follow their own cadences.
Yeah,
and shit
so
like
if
that.
You think of music in that way, it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah, and I mean, you do it enough, too, and you work that muscle to where, like, you're allowing this thing that isn't necessarily conscious to guide it.
Yeah.
It's like writing or any form of creativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's this really good sentence in Don DeLillo's most recent book where he just pointed out the, like, rise in the end of sentence cadences that's developed. I think it did come off kind of like old man looking at the younger generation, but the way just people end their sentences in questions now?
Yes! Like you just did, Al. Yeah. Yeah. I think I know what you're saying, maybe?
Yeah. So, yeah. Alright, so the Super Secret Project, I mean, how many releases do we have under that moniker?
Super Secret? Nine or so. Yeah, I don't know.
Feckin' Weirdo was one of the ones that really stood out to me.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
There are a lot of songs about isolation on that record.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I was just... That out record and the record before it was when I was living at Swerp, and it was just... I was just always by myself.
Yeah.
Most of the time by choice. It's just like... A lot of times I don't feel like I have anything in common with anyone, which is not a true thing. Like, everyone... We're all humans, but it's just... Sometimes it's so hard for me to not think that, just like, especially when I go to bars and, like, I play a lot of shows at bars. And
yeah, sure.
I don't drink, do drugs or anything.
Yeah.
And it's just like everyone I'm surrounded with does those things.
Yeah.
And also, like, I used to be, like, really bad at talking to girls I liked.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like that on top of everything has just, like, made me feel super shitty
all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's just like, if I can't do this, I'll just be by myself. I'll just do dope shit.
Yeah, it's fine.
And it'll be fine. Like, uh-huh. I wasn't like life is all over for me. I was just like, I just have to focus on my own thing, and I'll figure out how to
talk to people
and do that.
You never
later.
Drank?
I drank like a few times in my life, but I was maybe like 9 or 10 times.
Yeah.
Like max. And usually, I've only been drunk once.
Uh-huh.
It was whatever. I like didn't have a bad experience or a good experience, but I got drunk and played the drums. It was pretty tight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I took a couple of shots and, like, would sip some beers, but, yeah, never into it.
Yeah.
Never been into it.
Was it, like, did it make you feel uncomfortable? Did it, or it just,
drinking?
Like, didn't do it for you?
I mean, it's a lot of things. I feel like there are a lot of factors. One, I got annoyed with people being like, you don't drink, like, how? And I'd be fuck you. Like, it made me not want to drink even more that put this stigma on it. Like, you're an adult. You have to do this thing. It's like, no, I don't. I feel like that more than everything made me not want to do it even more.
Sure.
But, like, I don't really like the taste of it. And that's another main thing.
Uh-huh. It's just funny, the parallels, I guess. I mean, you know, I quit drinking 2 years ago next week.
Awesome.
And, you know, one of the things that happened after doing that was just becoming very isolated, mm-hmm. realizing that, you know, I got really good friends. I have a lot of friends that I really enjoy that I just see at the bar. Yeah. And, like, not to, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with but it's, you know, realizing that, okay, well, I don't see these people as often, so that means I have to try and make effort with them. Effort's fucking hard.
Yeah. Definitely.
And it's one of the reasons this podcast kind of came together was because, like, all right, well, I, like, do have some creative juices that, like, to channel it in some way. So that, like, feeling of, like, all right, well, if I'm going to be here, I might as well be doing something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I guess that's funny because I listened to Sit Tight so many times over the past few weeks. Tell me about that song.
That's one of my favorite songs I've ever made. One, because I got my friend Julia Steiner to sing on it, and I love her, and her voice is amazing.
Unbelievable guest spot on that.
That was like a dream come true. And that song is just, I got bullied a lot, but, like, I say all these things, and I'm never mad about it, because, like, I'm really happy with the person I've turned out to be. Uh-huh. And I don't think I would be myself without any of these encounters. But, like, I got bullied a lot by people, like cool kids in high school and middle school. Uh-huh. But they wouldn't make it obvious to other people. So, like, most people didn't know I got bullied. It would just be, like, kind of when I was by myself. People would be like, oh, man, this motherfucker with his tight ass pants and shit like that.
Yeah, sure,
just
like, sure.
Because I was into, like, rock and punk shit. But they were just like, man, y'all, why do you sound white, man?
Yeah, like, sure. Like,
shit like that. And, like, that, it didn't make me feel as bad at the time, because I would just, like, brush it off, but, like, I would think about it more and more, and I'd be like, damn, I really thought, like, no black people liked me. I had, like, two black friends, and I was like, I would talk to them and be like, man, yeah, other black people don't like me, and they're like, nah, man, we're just in high school, like,
people
are idiots. Uh-huh. And that's just what it was, like, when I got out of high school, it's just like, oh, shit, people are just
people just suck.
And now,
yeah.
Like, I have a bunch of different friends.
It's but, like, I mean, it's gotta be fucking hard just, like, having something that's, like, really easily identifiable for a reason that, like, somebody wouldn't like you.
Yeah, it's just like, I'm black, too. It's like, what is different?
Yeah,
that
sure.
was a lot of growing up, just, like, because I hung out with, like, just people that were into punk and shit. And
yeah, not a lot of black kids in that scene.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because, I don't know. It's just, like, drilled into people's brain. You need to like this specific type of music because you are this way.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, like, I wasn't about that. And luckily, my parents weren't about that shit either. So
yeah.
Yeah. So Sit Tight is about a lot of those situations. But I tried to, like, write it from someone else's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, looking in. But, yeah. Being bullied is dumb.
Yeah, for sure.
It's dumb.
One of the things I like about that song a lot is that the beat is, like, really busy.
Yeah.
Even though the instrumentation is, like, very, very chill, there's that really, really active snare.
Yeah.
Why'd you choose to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was just an in-the-moment thing.
Yeah.
In the moment, it felt right.
So many of the Super Secret songs are, like, really funny.
Yeah.
Like, 5 O'Clock Shadow, like, that made me laugh so much. But,
oh, man.
You know, then there are moments like Sit Tight or Art School Crush, these beautiful moments of introspection and, you know, just surrounded by this really great music. And, you know, on one hand, you're having fun.
Yeah.
You have these moments.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah, sure. So just, like, what's the balancing of that like?
You can't have one without the other. Like,
you think so?
Yeah. I don't want to be like a joke musician. I don't want to be Weird Al, even though I like making stupid songs about, like, eating cheese and butts and stuff.
Yeah.
I just think it's really funny. But if you notice, like, I try to make the dumber the lyrics are, than the like more time I spend on the music. So it's just people are like, I like this, but this is so stupid. I'm like, gotcha. It's so tight. But yeah, you can't have like the happiness without the real shit.
I like that a lot, man. It's like I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about filtering it out? You ever think like, man,
gonna do only real shit, or I'm just gonna be Weird Al. That'd be so tight. I wish I could, but it's like it's not in my brain to do that.
You get dark and you're like, I need to write some dark shit.
It's just like Or I get usually in my darkest times I write the goofiest shit because it's like this cheers me up and I know it'll cheer other people up too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so like a lot of that shit I wrote in the darkest times.
I mean, that's really funny, you know, going back to that concept of like, I'm gonna make something that's inherently happy because that's what's gonna make people happy.
Yeah. And I love doing that. Like, that's my favorite thing, to like hear someone who's like, I listened to this, it made me feel so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yes! That's so... Everything's worth it.
So if the... So the happy shit comes from when you're bummed out. You must have been having the time of your life when you made Despondent.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no. When I recorded it, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But I wrote that shit in high school and didn't record it until like 5 or 6 years after.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was never going to record it.
Uh-huh.
But my friend Seth Engel, who's my roommate now, like kind of nudged me and convinced me to do it. And I'm glad I did because... That's had a like bigger impact on people than I expected it to, like friends of mine.
Yeah,
just like,
I mean, it's unbelievably real.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about.
Why didn't you want to record it?
Because I don't like, I felt like that was too. A lot of it was too dark.
Uh huh.
You know. I felt like there was no. Like, it was just all downhill on that album. There was no, I didn't bring it up, like, one time on the album. And I didn't like that. So, that was just going to sit on my computer.
I mean, those songs are older. Is it before you kind of discovered the whole, like, making happy songs makes me happy?
No. I was still making, like, happy songs during that time as well.
What was going on then when you were writing those songs? Do you remember?
It was just a lot of people I knew... were into drugs, like, really heavily, and it was, like, fucking up their lives.
Uh-huh.
And...
This is high school still?
Yeah, high school. And just friends and, like, family members as well were into, like, some dark, fucked up shit. And...
What do you mean, dark, fucked up shit?
Just, like... heroin and coke, like, but, like, really bad. And
yeah.
Like, I didn't really talk to anyone about it, about that stuff, and I just would write... music about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that, and just I would think about like running away a lot in high school. I never did it.
Uh-huh.
But even though my family was fine in retrospect, it's just like,
sure,
just
that you're that young, there's, well, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
You know, you're, the list of solutions is kind of small.
But there's always, ever since I was little, there's just always that feeling of like, you don't belong in this place.
Sure.
Wherever you are is not the right place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just something I've had to get over as I grow up. It's just like, I get to decide what place is right for me, you know?
You made that decision?
Yeah. So when I was writing all those songs, it felt good to write them. It was just like stress relievers, like to write that music.
Yeah.
So,
do you get released from that?
Yeah. I love writing. That's like, I like writing more than I like performing.
Yeah.
Honestly. But yeah, I wrote that shit and I did not want anyone to hear it.
Uh-huh.
It's out and I'm so glad I put it out.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Tell me about the cover of the EP.
The EP with the...
telephone numbers.
Yeah, your own telephone numbers
is listed on the top.
Yeah, so that's the compromise that I've made that like made it okay for me to put out such like a dark album.
Uh-huh.
Because if I'm not gonna say, bring it up and make it positive, I'll have a list of ways where you can like seek help and make it positive.
Uh-huh.
And that was pretty much the only way I could justify putting that shit out, in my opinion.
Yeah,
was to like have ways for people to get help if they felt shitty.
If they felt, yeah, fuck, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a super badass move.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to see that you were, you know, able to... Fuck, I'm, like, processing this shit myself. Yeah, that's awesome. I guess, you know, I just... My high school buddy just took his own life last month. And, you know, it's... You go through so much of, just, you know, for me, it started with like, oh, well, I should have been there more. And then you just, you know, you kind of realize that it's really got nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
It's just where he was at. And, you know, there's nothing that you can do to take that back. It was his call. Yeah, I got a lot of respect for the fact that you put that out and, you know, put that out in that light. And,
no, it's all good. It's just, it feels like nothing you can do can make it, like, make things better sometimes, but then you talk to people, and that's literally all we can do as people, is, like, communicate how we feel.
Yeah.
Try to figure out how to get through shit like that. That's all we can do.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Situations. How am I doing?
Yeah.
Now, I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I'm doing great. It's just like, I don't have time to, like, be negative, you know?
Yeah.
But I still get, I get sad with shit that's sad. I get mad at shit that makes me mad.
It's a regular You're a human shit, being, like, yeah, for sure.
Majority of my time, I just try to stay pumped.
Uh-huh.
And get hype. Get people hype. Like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, to get for sure. Hype. This should make you happy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of things make me happy.
Is there a reason that a lot of this, a lot of the super secret stuff comes off of your Bandcamp?
I don't, not really.
Yeah.
There was no, I think I was just feeling crazy one day and I was just like, fuck all this music.
Yeah.
I'm taking it all off. And I just like hit everything on my Bandcamp, hit all my music videos. And I was like, who cares about music? It was just so dumb for no reason.
And really then, no reason?
Yeah, no reason. There was no reason. Like, everything was going fine. I was just like, this is all stupid. I just go through phases like that. But this was the first time I like took everything down.
Yeah.
And then people were hitting me up like, hey, why'd you take it down?
I had to pirate so much shit for this thing.
And I was just, I would just like respond to the first couple people like, well, you should have downloaded that when I had it up. And I just felt like such a wiener, like telling my friends like, it was free for the past 4 years and you didn't download it. It's like, whose fault is that? It's like, I just streamed it every time. And I'm like, whatever. So stupid.
Well, I mean, yeah, dude, having a fucking public persona is like hard as fuck. Yeah. Man. And I mean, even just like, I mean, I saw that and I was like, oh, okay, word. He wasn't having a very good time.
No, it was, there was no bad about it. I was just being a wiener.
But I mean, I don't know. I post shit on Facebook. I delete it like 5 minutes after. Yeah. If I look at it, I'm like, oh, that wasn't actually funny.
Oh man, I don't care. I don't post anything. I don't spell check or like make sure anything's written correctly. I just type. It's like my journal on Facebook. It's just what I've been using it as. Because if you like use that shit seriously and read everyone's posts, it gets super depressing.
Yeah,
and you get, or you get like really annoyed with people. So I like barely look at other people's posts. I look at like the first 10 things that come up, and then I just like type a bunch of dumb stuff.
Check
my messages, and then that's it.
So you're involved with, I mean, so many different things, and you know, growing up in the punk scene, and you know, you're like, also you rap, and I love the competitiveness of hip hop.
Yes,
and, like,
me too.
Do you ever wish that was like a part of punk?
I do. I wish a lot of things about hip hop were in punk. Like, there's this whole stigma on punk that like, if you get paid, you're like a fucking poser.
You're
just like, you're on tour and you're asking like, did we get any money from the show? And people are just like, wow, we made $3. We could split it between four bands. But like rappers, that shit would never fly at all. People are just like, yo, I came and did this for you to watch. It's like, yo, pay me something.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is cool. Getting money so you can eat is fun. Yeah. I like food. But also, yeah, the whole persona where it's just like, yo, everyone, you have to, like, strive to be the best, and you have to, like, believe in your art. Like, rappers, it's sort of cocky, like, a lot of the time, but, like, you have to, like, believe in your art, which I think is a thing in the punk community. Like, people belittle their art, like, so much.
Yeah, because you don't want to be the one that's, like, hyping their own shit.
Yeah, but if you don't, you have to at least like it, you know?
Yeah,
like,
people
are scared to, like, say that they enjoy their own band. It's like, I enjoy it. Why else would I be doing it if I
didn't enjoy it? Or it's got to, like, come from a tortured place.
Yeah, just like,
I just need to do this. Yeah, it'd be so sick to, like, go see Spirit of the Beehive just come out and just be like, fuck the world is. Fuck the hotel. You were the best band in the world.
Best band of all time. Yeah. No one could top this band. We got 3 guitars. How many bands does your band have? How many guitars? 2? That's some weak shit. Yeah.
So what do you got going on now? You got this Man Without a Head record.
Yeah, I was very excited about that.
Yeah.
Got that out. Got a hip-hop record that's, like, 90% done. I just gotta
wait for it. Is that a super secret project?
Yeah, super secret. I'm waiting for that to come out. I got a huge show coming August 20th. It's, like, the Super Records launch party.
Oh, cool. Yeah, tell me about Super Records, too.
Super Records. Okay. My friend Glenn, who is a lawyer, and he's, like, the sweetest person. He's, like, the best person that exists on the planet.
Uh-huh.
He approached me with the idea of starting a record label. And I was all like, yeah, because of the whole Swerp thing.
Sure.
Swerp didn't end that well. And I was like, mostly because I thought people would be like, oh, you're doing this again? But he's such a good person. He has his shit together. And he just knows what we need to do. Like, and if he doesn't know, he's the type of person that will, like, learn, like, sit at a computer and learn until he knows, like exactly what we need to do. And... yeah, I don't think I would have started a label with anyone else. Like, he's, like, the perfect combination. And we use the name Super because, like, I use that shit all the time.
Yeah.
It's just like, why not? Why not? Branding, branding, marketing. But yeah, he decided to start it. And this Man Without a Head was going to be the first release. But we ended up putting a free release out before, which is like a... My friends got together while I was on tour and did a cover album of all, like, a bunch of my songs, and that shit ruined my life. I did not know how to react. They just
totally surprised you with
totally
it.
Totally surprised. That's like, they were at my house. Like, I came from the airport, and then there was a party going on in my house. I was so jet lagged. I hadn't slept in so long, and they were there, and they're like, "Woo, party!" And I was like, "What is happening?" But oh man, that was the greatest day of my life. I can't believe. Like, I felt every emotion at the same time. I feel like I was mad. I was just so exhausted. I was so happy. Like, cry. I didn't know if I should cry. Like, I was, it was fucking beautiful.
So, that's so cool.
Yeah, that ended up being our first release. And we put it up for free and with, like, sites you could donate to if you want to. And then this Man Without a Head record came out, which was Glenn's project. He came to me, like, a year or two ago with, he's like, I got these song ideas. I have, like, a shitload of lyrics. He had, like, 10 pages of lyrics that were, like, so in-depth and crazy. Like, if you know Glenn, he just, like, he's a thinker. There's so much shit on there. I was like, I don't know what any of this stuff means, but it sounds cool. And we worked together, me, him, my friend Brendan, who plays drums in Nervous Passenger, like, helped with lyrics and sang on a lot of it, and our friend Pat Mitchell, and just, like, a lot of other people got together and, like, made his vision, like, into an actual album.
Yeah, it's really cool. Tight. I love that record. It's so
Thank you. So I forgot to bring it. I was supposed to bring you one.
Actually, I still got one in the mail.
Oh, hell
so
yeah.
I was supposed to tell you. So we both forgot.
Yeah.
Woo. How do you feel about the podcast?
The podcast? I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think it doesn't even feel like a podcast. It just feels like we're chilling, which is good.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I've done some podcasts where they're like, so what does music mean to you? And I'm just like, fuck you. Ask me better questions.
It was funny with you because I usually have a timeline that I can trace. And last night I was trying to put it together and I was like, what the fuck are we going to talk about?
Who cares?
And then I was just like, shit, we'll just hang out. You know,
hang out, talk about life.
All right. Thanks for coming by, man.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. Sticks and stones are all my home, but words are never good. Too hard to disregard. I'm all ignore the hate I couldn't crush. I just have to live in fear. Numero crush bones. I'm never scared. I have prepared my comfort zone. And there are no names, no titles, no pointless false idols, no bitch, no bastard, no back.
class from asking in no crazy shit. No nigga wish I'm stronger than you. Stupid shit, no badge and rash of fighting pains. Just chilling in my hideaway.
You know, when I came upon the Despondent EP doing my research and writing this interview, I remember seeing the cover, which literally is just a list of phone numbers for a number of different crisis lines. Namdi's own phone number is at the top. I just immediately went into interviewer mode and thought, well, there's something to talk about. And, you know, the objective art appreciator in me is saying, wow, that's a badass aesthetic. But the moment we started talking about it, I was just overcome with the real human stuff. And that loss is very fresh. And I miss my friend. I miss him a lot. And I'm starting to realize that big moments of catharsis and understanding are just big myths when it comes to processing shit like this. But There are these special spots in there that we get from sharing with each other. And Namdi is a special kind of artist and just an unbelievable human being. I've thought about this interview a lot since it happened. I've thought a lot about what I wanted to say here. But really, I just want to thank Namdi for doing everything he does. He's had a real impact on the last few weeks of my life. So I know this is the part where I list all the links to all of Namdi's different projects, but I think it'd be better to just direct you to the info section on Bandcamp or to check them out on our website, which low-key is up and running, betteryetpod.com. But I'll tell you what, Super Secret Side Project, Super Swag Project, Monobody, Nervous Passenger, Man Without a Head, Itto, it's all good. All of it. Check it out. Like the Better Yet podcast on Facebook, we'll be posting links to a new episode every Wednesday. You can listen to this podcast on Bandcamp, betteryetpodcast.bandcamp.com, or on our new website, betteryetpod.com. I'll have an iTunes update for you next week. Tell a friend about the podcast, someone you think might like what we're doing over here. Tell them to come check us out. And you know what? Every one of these talks is special to me. This is one I'll be remembering down the line. Thank you for coming by and spending time with us. This song's for Kyle, wherever you are. I miss you, buddy. Thanks, buddy.